Welcome to Looking at Lucasfilm, the podcast with a different perspective on the world of Star Wars, Indiana Jones, and all the other entities that George Lucas, Kathleen Kennedy, Dave Filoni, and the rest of the crew at Lucasfilm have dreamed up over the past 40 years. I'm entertainment writer Jim Hill, and my co-host, the one, the only, Dan Z, and I are recording this on Sunday, December 13th. And Dan, I thought it would be worth mentioning as we start out here that 51 weeks ago, almost a full year, last year, on December 20th, Star Wars Episode 9, The Rise of Skywalker, arrived in theaters. You know, supposed to be the dramatic close of the Skywalker saga, put the button on 42 years of epic filmmaking. I don't want to get into the rehash of the rather mixed response that J.J. Abrams films got. But do you remember how Disney Plus actually moved up the release date of Episode 7?
Season
1 of The Mandalorian moved it for 2 days because they didn't want those two Star Wars productions to go head-to-head on the same day.
Yes, we had to wait a week between the last two episodes.
That we did. It just, for me, it just seems weird how the end of the Star Wars saga, something, you know, me personally, looking forward to since 1977, got totally thrown into eclipse by The Mandalorian.
Yeah.
And in fact, since Dan and I last talked, two more episodes of season two have aired, The Tragedy and The Believer, and Dan and I will talk more about those two episodes in the second half of the day show. But the success of that limited series has obviously had a profound effect on the future course that Lucasfilm is charting for not only the Star Wars franchise, but, you know, Willow and, you know, other things that they're up to. And now you and I had talked on earlier episodes of Lucasfilm, how Lucasfilm, based on the huge success of season one of The Mandalorian, had supposedly seriously been rethinking what properties would end up where. But going into that, did you have any idea out ahead of the investors' day, you know, a presentation earlier this week, that what was about to happen in regard to how much stuff, Star Wars stuff, was going to end up on Disney Plus?
I didn't. I knew it was in for quite a day, just based on all the initial buzz on Twitter. But little did I have any idea of the absolute Star Wars avalanche. To coin one of your phrases, talk about drinking out of a fire hose.
Oh yeah.
And by the way, how about I also want to shout out that this is the penultimate episode of my swan song. I've only got this one and one more show left. What a gift the Lucasfilm gave us to break all this stuff down.
Well, no pressure, but again, they got to come up with something equally good for the, you know, our last show. But well, let's just jump into it. What, to your way of thinking, was the biggest piece of news that came out?
You know, honestly, I was most hoping to hear that we were going to get an Ahsoka series, so I'm glad we did. I was really shocked by the amount of live action stuff that we were going to get. But the thing that stunned me the most was Rogue Squadron. Mm-hmm. And when I first saw that logo in the X-Wings, I was actually disappointed. And I thought, really? I mean, pilots, who cares? That's just not something that's ever spoken to me. And then I watched Patty Jenkins's video on Twitter about why she's making this movie and her connection to fighter pilots and her father and losing her father and why she wants to make this movie. Then she puts on that X-Wing pilot outfit. And I tell you what, I was so fired up for that, because if you have purpose and passion and actual pathos that's well above and beyond, I want to make a cool movie and make a mark. She's already made a lot of those with Wonder Woman.
No, that's it exactly.
She got this drive to do this to honor her father. And I was so impressed that I thought, okay, I am all in for this. So that was what blew me away more than anything.
Well, and now just to sort of take the 30,000 foot view here, folks, this is a big get for Lucasfilm and Disney to get Patty Jenkins. In fact, I don't know if you've heard the buzz about Wonder Woman 1984, but there's the first Wonder Woman movie was a wonderful superhero movie. In fact, for a lot of people, you know, especially given how dark, a lot of the Snyder, Justice League and the like movies got, the fact that, you know, Wonder Woman was just such, you know, it was a great action film, but at the same time, it was a great tonic. It was, there was lightness, there was fun to it, and
heart, a lot of heart,
a lot of heart. And so the fact that, you know, and you know, if anything, the Wonder Woman 1984, which drops on Christmas Day against Pixar's Soul, has better buzz than, you know, the first film. So, you know, the fact that Disney and Lucasfilm have persuaded Patty to come over and make a Star Wars film, this is huge. It's, you know, and as you mentioned, the connection to the, you know, her personal connection to the material. So yeah, that's a great get. And but also for me, what's fascinating is that's the first theatrical release, Christmas of 2023.
Yeah.
Again, yeah. And remember, one of the reasons we're getting that for Christmas of 2023 is, well, again, COVID, coronavirus, because what is it? West Side Story, which was supposed to have come out this Christmas, got bumped to Christmas of 2021, which in turn meant Avatar 2 got bumped to Christmas of 2022. So this is the first new theatrical release to follow The Rise of Skywalker. And to have Patty Jenkins direct it, that's really kind of huge.
Major coup for Lucasfilm. And I feel like, you know, I'm not sure how much longer Kathleen Kennedy's going to be at Lucasfilm, but she has really cemented her legacy here, in my opinion.
Well, now it's so interesting you bring that up, because again, there has been a lot of talk over, you know, the past year or so about, you know, Kathleen Kennedy and how much longer she'll be staying as the head of Lucasfilm. So first of all, I found it fascinating that she was front and center at this presentation, that, you know, they didn't bring in a Dave Filoni, they didn't bring in a Jon Favreau, and the, you know, those two guys obviously should be celebrated for what they've done with The Mandalorian, but it was Kathleen front and center. And more to the point, here she is talking about the future of the company. And let's be clear here. I mean, there's a lot of cool stuff they announced, but it was also very significant. Did you catch a thing about them making three volumes now? That they're building one in London, one in Australia, and then they're taking the one they used in L.A. for the production of The Mandalorian and making it even bigger?
Oh, I did not hear about any of this. That's exciting.
Yeah. So, you know, the fact that this technology that made The Mandalorian gave it that amazing cinematic look, you know. And in fact, I don't know. Did you get a copy of the Art of Star Wars, The Mandalorian, the Phil Sustak book?
You know, I did not. It's actually something I have on my Christmas list.
Okay. Well, definitely talk to Santa, because there's this great line in here from the foreword of Doug Chang that, you know, he talked about, in my nearly 15 years of designing for the Star Wars universe, the Mandalorian's development process was the most demanding because of our aggressive production schedule. We had a third of the time and half the budget of the typical Star Wars film, and yet we were tasked with designing more than 300 minutes of content, enough for two feature films. And, you know, that they only managed to pull that off because of the volume. So the fact that, you know, now we're going to have three. And also for me, you mentioned the Ahsoka Tano limited series. I guess we should also talk about Rangers of the Republic.
Both Rangers of the Republic and Ahsoka are all in what Tracy Canobio is labeled the Filoni-verse.
Mm-hmm. But did you catch the part where both the Rangers of the New Republic and the Ahsoka Tano show will be set in the timeline of The Mandalorian?
I did.
And the interesting part is that at some point in the future, and in fact, I made a few calls, and interesting part is this will probably be season 4 of The Mandalorian, not season 3, because they need to launch Rangers of the New Republic. And they also need to launch the Ahsoka Tano series. But there is going to be this huge crossover story that supposedly will start on the Ahsoka Tano show, continue into the New Republic, and end on The Mandalorian. But it will be one of these things, the only way you can experience this amazing Star Wars event is if you subscribe to Disney Plus. So
it's like they're taking a page out of Marvel's playbook.
Well, but see, now that again, it's interesting that you bring that up, because remember, by the way, did you actually watch the Investors Day presentation?
I watched all 4 hours, and so did my 7-year-old son. And by the end of this thing, like when they announced that Mark Ruffalo was going to be in, he jumped off of the chair at the dinner table and landed on the ground and said, "I can't take any more of this. It's too great." That was wonderful. It was so fun to experience that with him. Yep.
Okay. Now, I have to ask, how did Mason handle it when they would do the thing? I mean, face it, they only blacked out, I want to say, 10 of the 40 video clips that they showed us. But how did he handle it when they do the big promo and then suddenly it's just music and the countdown?
It became a joke. We would like laugh and high five and giggle and run around the house and just wait until the timer went off. We had fun. And at first I couldn't figure out what they were doing, but then I remembered, oh wait, I'm not an investor. My blood, sweat, and tears are not enough to be able to see this.
That's it. Exactly. You're not going to move the needle, you know, to get the stock price to go up, you know,
but. And boy, did they ever.
Oh yeah, yeah, but yeah, that's the thing. I guess so. We're talking 2022, but that's the year where there'll be this amazing crossover event between the three shows, and I guess Filoni and Favreau were just, you know, the scripts are written for season 3, and the Mandalorian production will get underway sometime after the first of the year, but. Immediately behind that is the Ahsoka Tano and the Rangers of the New Republic show, which again, that's all built around and that's the interesting part. Did you notice that they did not come straight out and say that show is built around Cara Dune?
Yeah, in my mind, it just seems so clear at the end of you know, the episode The Siege that they was what they were trying to set up, and they didn't specifically say that. And you can't upload it because of certain images, political images and things like that. So I don't know.
Okay. So anyway, just keep that in mind, folks. That's 2022, but 2021, we will get, a season 3. And we'll talk about what possibly might happen in season 3 and second half of the show. So anyway, going on, what did you make of the Taika Waititi announcement?
I loved it, and I wish that we actually would have gotten something. Mm-hmm. I was pretty happy with Taika Waititi's response on Twitter, because he quoted the tweet with the announcement from the Star Wars Twitter account and said, "Wait, what?" And that was all he said. But it was great. But I was hoping for at least a title or some sort of idea of what it was about or where in the timeline it's taking place. But we got absolutely nothing, which tells me that's even further out than Patty Jenkins' story.
Yeah, no, definitely. Definitely. In fact, you know, basically, they've had conversations about it, but Taika right now is, you know, face down in the ditch, getting ready to do Thor, Love and Thunder in Sydney. So we'll hear more toward the end of next year. But beyond that, all right, so what about the Lando series? I mean, you being as big a fan of Solo, a Star Wars story, was that kind of a surprise?
It was really a stunner. It would have been nice to hear something about Donald Glover or someone, but this is almost like, while everybody seems to want a Solo sequel, well, you all should have went to the theater to see the first one, by the way.
Mm-hmm.
But I thought it was a genuine surprise. I was happy that we're going to get more in that particular part of the story. And I'm assuming it'll be, you know, somewhere after the events of the Solo film, but I was pretty excited. What about you?
Well, you know, again, made a few discreet calls, and it turns out, the interesting thing is this could be a Donald Glover, Billy Dee Williams team up project, as in the way it was explained to me is that, you know, Billy Dee may be in each episode, but kind of in a "I remember when," and he would narrate the episode.
Oh, I would love that.
So, or at least that's, you know, the idea that's being batted around. Let's see, beyond that, what did you think of the film footage that we got to see from the set of Andor?
That was pretty stunning, because I wasn't expecting much about that. I'm still so much into The Mandalorian that I'm not really focused on anything else Star Wars related. Mm-hmm. But it was great to see how incredibly far along they are. The mm-hmm. genuine enthusiasm and glee that Diego Luna has about this character and about being able to be a part of this universe mm-hmm. looks very intense and very gritty. Remind me of the first 10 minutes of Rogue One. Mm-hmm. So I was very, very encouraged by this. What about you?
Well, I you know, again, what was interesting to me is, remember, you know, with The Mandalorian, there's been all of this talk about, again, the volume, you know, that this, you know, technology that's used to, you know, create the outdoors and, make it possible to basically be anywhere and, you know, and get that cinematic feel. For me, what was interesting about Andor was to see, you know, whole city blocks that had been built. That lots of practical sets. So for me, it's going to be interesting to, okay, so how, you know, this looks like that this actually has a different style, a different technique than what we've got with The Mandalorian, which, don't get me wrong, is it could be a really great thing. But, you know, for me also, this one is shooting in London, and supposedly once they wrap production, who comes in right behind them? But the Obi-Wan Kenobi, limited series. And, well, again, we have to talk about that because of the Hayden Christensen announcement. Now, have you heard anything about that?
That was a huge stunner to me. And It's people have said to me, well, is that really great news? Because if he's Darth Vader, he can't take off his helmet or he'll die. So does it matter that Hayden Christensen is inside the suit? And my answer is unequivocally yes, because mm-hmm. hearing Darth Vader back, thrilling. Hearing that Hayden Christensen as Darth Vader, that raises the emotional quotient exponentially, because you've got that investment. Because so many people, I mean, I'll give you a perfect example. My students and me, Mr. Zare, did you hear that Hayden Christensen was coming back to Star Wars? And then he laughed after he said it because he knew who he was talking to. Mm-hmm. And then I said, yes, I did. And he goes, you got to understand that for me, he is my Luke Skywalker, because I didn't see the original trilogy. I saw the prequel trilogy when I was a kid. And so many people, even my son, who's a freshman in college, he said to me, my Twitter and Instagram is blowing up because a lot of kids my age are thrilled about this. So it's a stroke of genius.
Well, and that coupled with the fact that, you know, here we are, we've got Deborah Chow, who directed, you know, a couple of the very best, Mandalorians at the first season of the show. And so, face it, this one has been a long time coming. You know, you and I have been tracking this project since, you know, the Obi-Wan film, you know, and so now to have this limited series and now to have Hayden back. But supposedly as soon as Andor wraps, they strike the sets and the Obi-Wan team comes right in behind them. And I, again, just going to be fascinated to see what happens with this one. Let's see. What else do we have? Yes. Now, this one, you know, face it, with its ties to the High Republic, this one really is kind of the mystery project, because, you know, face it, so much of, if the plan, if everything had gone according to plan, we'd be knee-deep in High Republic books and such right now. But, of course, you know, COVID-19 knocked that, like so many other, entertainment-related plans that all these giant corporations have had off schedule. But on the other hand, the fact that we've got Leslie Headlin, you know, the creator of the Russian Doll behind this, they walked out that this is a mystery thriller, set in the final days of the High Republic. And it's just sort of like, I don't even know the first days of the High Republic yet. So it's the notion that it's the final days. So
I was pretty surprised that is, they're actually going to take the High Republic and put it onto a screen, and it's not just going to be in the form of literature already. So that's very much kind of bold. It's also a nice indicator of where they hope to potentially take some aspect of Star Wars. And since the embargo is lifted, I can say I've read all of the High Republic books, and it's going to be a fun aspect of the universe for people to explore. That's for sure.
Ooh, Okay, very cool. Very cool. All right. Now, I guess we should pivot now to, you know, this is all of the live action stuff. So let's talk about what's going on with Star Wars in regard to animation. Of course, you know, it's no big surprise, the Bad Batch that already got announced. But what did you think of the trailer?
Well, I was going to say, were you surprised at how far along they were? I don't know what I expected as far as where they're at with this thing, but I thought it looked gorgeous. I thought the animation looked stellar. Mm-hmm. It very much looked like it was Clone Wars 2.0, and I am very much here for it. Very much, even the logo, mm-hmm. has Clone Wars, and then it burns off and shows the Bad Batch. But there's a lot of potential there. I heard Steven Stanton's voice mm-hmm. as Grand Moff Tarkin, which is exciting. They use the McDermott track from Revenge of the Sith for the Palpatine, but I feel like there's more story to be told between bridging the gap between that movie and, or yeah, between Revenge of the Sith and A New Hope. So I'm very excited. I'm much more optimistic. I thought it'd just be kind of a fun mm-hmm. filler. I mean, I liked Star Wars Resistance, but to me, it had nowhere than near the emotional wallop that Clone Wars or Rebels did. But this felt more like it was going to be along the lines of Rebels and Clone Wars to me.
No, very much so. And you'll remember, it's important looking back on Star Wars Resistance. There was a deliberate choice made there. Remember how when they were initially talking about that show that they were really aiming that one at 10-year-olds, and there was, uh-huh. you know, and face it, that I don't think the show ever was able to sort of rise out of that. I still think there was some great storytelling.
Oh, I did too.
But, great, yeah. Cast. You know, well, let's say, okay, so do we have the Bad Batch? But what do you make of Star Wars Visions?
I honestly am sort of ambivalent to that. I'm not an anime person. So mm-hmm. it really, I think it's cool, and I'm sure there's a certain audience that's interested in that kind of a thing. But honestly, the only reason I'll watch is because of Coffee with Kenobi. Otherwise, I probably wouldn't even pay it any mind. What about you?
Well, I don't know if you followed that series of the shorts that they've done where they would visit, you know, the story of each individual character, whether it was Leia or Luke or
Horses of Destiny.
Yeah, yeah,
I love that. That, but that's not anime. Anime is such a different animal.
Well, face it. You know, they took the characters that we know and did them in a different style. And to be honest, that's the one of the things I've been told out ahead of Visions is that, again, it's still the characters in the world that you love, but done in a slightly different style. Because, again, going forward here, this is all about sort of bumping out the borders of what we traditionally consider Star Wars. And the fact that this brings us to the next project, a droid story, which is... going to be a full-on animated film for Disney Plus, built around R2-D2, 3C-3PO, and a yet-to-be-introduced droid character.
It's actually a movie, not a TV show?
Nope, this is going to be a movie.
I don't think I realized that.
Yeah, the way it was explained to me is that, that it's going to be an adventure where, you know, I'm told 70 to 75 minutes. But with the idea that this is a possible format going forward. Now, mind you, that they've made a very big deal about the fact that this is sort of, you know, a Venn diagram production. It's going to be Lucasfilm Animation teaming up with the effects side of Industrial Light and Magic. So it's, and remember, we are in an age where, you know, those lines blur. You know, when you see a film, you know, that you think of as a live action film, but if you factor in all of the animation that's be done for, you know, virtual characters and that sort of thing, it's really like 90% animation and, you know, 10% live action. This is going to have a photorealistic quality, or at least that's what I've been told up front.
Does that mean like Disney's Christmas Carol with Jim Carrey? Is that kind of what we're talking about?
You know, that film hasn't particularly aged well, has it? I don't know.
I love that movie. I think it's outstanding. It's almost word for word from Charles Dickens's novel. So I will
think of it. And you're right. But on the other hand, when we get to the third act, and when it's suddenly the spirit of Christmas future, mm-hmm. Only he's chasing him through the streets and
yeah, that's a good focus. Yeah, I don't like that part.
You know, I mean, that's the thing. For me, that just signaled that Robert Zemeckis, you know, and it had done such a wonderful job up until that point, didn't trust the material and had to jazz it up. And
I agree.
You know,
and so, more over that part, by the way.
Ah, okay. But yeah, for me, what's so enjoyable is how much of it is faithful prior to that point. But you're right. It just, that chunk makes me crazy. But no, that this, I don't think this would be performance capture, or for that matter, you know, I mean, going close in on Jim Carrey as Scrooge's face and seeing, you know, the hair on the bridge of his nose. It's just like, you know, I don't think, as much as we all love R2-D2 and C-3PO, I don't think we should go, wow, look at
that. It will be nice to spend some time with R2 and 3PO, because even though they were in the sequel trilogy, albeit, you know, not very much, except for maybe a little bit of 3PO in the last one, it'll be nice to spend more time with them, because I've missed them. I mean, they can't help at all.
No, they're great. What was interesting for me back in the day was how, when people were talking initially, and we're talking 77, and they would sort of deconstructing the film, they would point to R2-D2 and C-3PO and make the comparison to Laurel and Hardy, you know, just sort of the one's round and fat and one's tall and skinny and they're comic relief. And it was just sort of like, okay, I think you're trying a little hard here to sell that idea, but it will be nice to see those characters again. And speaking of characters that it will be nice to see again, as part of Disney Investors Day, we also did get an update on 85. We now know what production will finally get underway in late spring of 2021, and they are committed to that July 2022 release date.
Okay.
And keep hammering on the point, that's Harrison Ford is the only one who can play Indiana Jones. And they did use language to the effect of final adventure.
I caught that too. Yeah. That made me sad, because like, come on, don't close the door all the way, because there's still things we can do. But the amount of time it takes for them to make one of these things.
Yeah.
I'm just glad to get some news about it. I mean, this is what, the fourth time we've found out that it's going to have a release date and it's coming out, but let's hope that this actually happens, because I want to see it one more time, as you know. And he's my favorite.
I guess for me, what concerns me again is indies going into theaters now, behind Jungle Cruise. And don't get me wrong, that was always a plan, that the Emily Blunt, Dwayne Johnson movie, was going to come out the summer beforehand. But it's just sort of like, and I don't know if you've heard any of the stories about that, but Disney really does believe that this will be their next Pirates, that this will launch a series of films and, build interest in that theme park attraction. And I feel bad, for the fact that Harrison will be 75, 76?
Probably, yeah.
Yeah, so I want this to be a great, especially if it is going to be the last Indiana Jones film. I want this to be great, and it's poor James Mangold already coming in behind Steven Spielberg, who stepped away from the project. No pressure, final installment. Got to be the best of them all.
Oh, wow. So. That isn't going to happen, because none's going to be better than Raiders. But just to see him on screen with the hat on and the swag, let's make that happen.
Okay. And all right. And now, again, on previously in the show, we've talked about the Willow limited series. We do now have an actual release window for the limited series. It will be 2022. And in fact, as I understand it, the once they shoot the on location work in New Zealand, the crew will default to Australia and use the new volume to work on this production. So that's evidently it's being constructed for that. Beyond that, they were relatively close to the vest about that. In fact,
yeah.
That was another one of the ones where they cut away to the music of the countdown clock, didn't they?
Yeah. And had you heard that with the volume that you have to make sure that the last person leave plugs it into the USB port on the wall so that it works the next day like an iPhone?
Oh well, I'm glad I'm not in charge of the volume, because I can't tell you the number of mornings I get up and Nancy looks at her phone and it's like, you didn't plug it in again. It's like, sorry, I forgot. All right, we talked a little bit about this project previously, Children of Blood and Bone. This is going to be a theatrical release. I got this confirmed, on Friday, calling to the folks at Lucas. And again, going to be made through 20th Century Studios. But it's, again, based on the children's bestseller, the best-selling novel about a young African girl's heart-racing quest to restore magic to her forsaken people, the Match. The downside of it is that they go, yes, this is being prepped for theatrical, and yes, we're talking casting, and no, we have no idea when it will actually make it out to theaters. So I guess we're going to have to keep an eye on that one, Dan. And speaking of blood and bone, didn't get to see any blood, but got to see a lot of bones being broken in the tragedy, episode 6 of season 2 of The Mandalorian, and in a moment, Dan and I will talk about the return of Boba Fett.
With Kizik Hands Free Shoes, motion sounds something like this. Kizik helps you experience the magic of motion. With over 200 patents and easy on, easy off technology, you'll never have to touch your shoes again. There are hundreds of styles and colors, plus a squish like nothing you've ever felt. For a limited time, get a free pair of socks with your first order at kizik.com/socks.
Hey, welcome to IKEA, where even this desk is circular.
Huh, how so? Looks pretty rectangular to me.
It's because we're always looking to repair, reuse, and relove our products, like buying back your IKEA items for store credit. Or shop our as-is section for great deals. You can even order free spare parts. Get on the circular path for a more sustainable future.
Still a rectangle.
Get started at ikea-usa.com/circular. Visit ikea-usa.com/circular for as-is information and buyback and resale terms and conditions. Spare parts not available for all products.
The longest field goal ever attempted is 76 yards. The longest field goal ever missed? Also 76 yards. Why bring this up? Because knowing your limits matters, both when you're kicking a field goal and when you gamble. Betting more than you're comfortable with is like trying a 70-yard field goal. It probably won't go well. So set a limit when you gamble and stick to it. Want more helpful tips like this? Go to keepitfunohio.com for games, quizzes, and lots of ways to keep your gambling from getting out of hand.
Okay, we're back. All right, so Dan, let's face it, The Mandalorian has been very sparing about how they sort of walked out Boba Fett. I mean, literally the first time we got to see this character, we only got to see what his boots, and it was the fans who noticed, what, the spurs on the boots that walked up to Fennec Shand's body?
That's right.
And who were like, oh my God, it's Boba Fett. And it's like, really? You know him from the spurs? And I guess that's the thing. Was this something prominent on the character previously? Because I don't think I'd ever noticed that.
I don't think it is. I mean, they added the sound effect because of the sort of the Clint Eastwood thing. But I feel like that was more wishful thinking than anything. Because mm-hmm. it made sense being added, that it was Tatooine. Because I didn't notice that. But I thought, well, maybe it could be him, or mm-hmm. who knows? Maybe it's some sort of a hunter of some kind. But yeah, boy. Well, I don't want to say too much, but go ahead.
Okay, so we have our first episode of season 2. We have the Marshal, and in the final moments, we see, a character from behind that's watching Mando on his, speeder bike, riding away from the mining colony, and he's got Boba Fett's armor on it, and the camera, he turns to the camera, and the internet loses its mind because it's Mr. Morrison. you know,
Father Moana.
Yeah, and who played Django back in Attack of the Clones. And so, again, it was fascinating, again, to watch people, you know, just sort of, you know, as we were waiting for that episode, we would kindly, finally confirm who it was. People trying to suss it out and determine, you know, what's the backstory on this guy. And so, and again, you know, that face it, you know, we've known about, you know, Django for as far back as Attack of the Clones. And I, you know, we got to meet Django's son, Boba in, Empire back in 81, right?
80.
80. Okay. And, you know, and then, we saw, you know, it's always been one of those, given how heavily the fan community got invested in Boba, how he was taken off the canvas in Return of the Jedi at 83, still kind of stings, doesn't it? Or,
well, I mean, when I was a wee young Padawan, I liked Boba Fett because I liked the action figure. I thought he was cool in Empire, and he frustrated me because of his role in Han Solo going into Carbonite. But then I never really liked him in Return of the Jedi, and I always thought it was poetic that this big bad bounty hunter gets his comeuppance by a semi temporarily blinded Han Solo. So that never bugged me because I never really understood the hype besides how cool he looked. Mm-hmm. I didn't love him in Attack of the Clones. I didn't like him in Clone Wars. So I've never been a Boba Fett fan. But in this episode, Jim,
I was about to ask you about this. In the tragedy, in your wildest dreams, did you ever think of a redemptive Boba Fett arc?
Never. Not only did I not expect him to be redeemed, I didn't think I would like him, but I loved him. He literally catapulted to a place of prominence in my fandom. Mm-hmm. And I see the character, I mean, obviously in my studio, I guess you've never really seen my studio, but I've got stuff all over the place. I've got a lot of Fett stuff, a lot of old action figures of Fett. Mm-hmm. And now I look, he's kind of in a place of prominence because now I understand a little bit more about what makes him tick. Maybe it was being being digested with the Sarlacc. Mm-hmm. It changed his point of view or his perspective, but now I see a sense of honor. Mm-hmm. I see a code. He's not just a thug with cool armor. And the fact that he's not only is he Mandalorian, but the way he followed that Gaffney stick was absolutely insane and electric. Probably the most violent, visceral stuff we've seen in Star Wars. And boy, it was spectacular.
And let's note here again, this was Robert Rodriguez's debut directing an episode of The Mandalorian. And I dearly hope that man gets invited back, because the action scenes in this thing were crazy.
Insane. And the pacing, the fact that it was such a short episode and so much happened. And I love when Slave One first shows up, your jaw drops because you're not expecting to see that. And the fact that we don't know for about 10 minutes whose side he's on or how he's going to play it was pretty spectacular. It was terrific storytelling.
And at the same time, I love the left-handed humor of the thing. Like when he blows out of the sky that the troop carrier, which then falls on the second one and takes that out. And Mando's like, good shooting. I was trying for the other one. You know, and it's just sort of like, I love that just sort of dry left-handed, or more to the point, that wonderful moment at the end where, you know, we made a deal. We were going to, we were going to work together until the child was returned to you safely. And we're now in your debt. And, you know, I mean, who would have seen that coming?
Not me. And I think you and I emailed about this or maybe texted, but remember when we were talking about the HasLab Razor Crest and I jokingly said, well, I hope this thing doesn't get blown up.
Oh.
Man, you and I are on fire with this stuff. Great dragon.
Yeah. But at the same time, I love, I love Mando sifting through the ashes and finding the little knob that Grogu had played with. And more to the point, the spear that he'd been, gifted, the steel by Ahsoka and the fact that, you know, that's carried forward.
That's right.
By the way, all right, one other thing we really need to talk about in this episode, and again, I need you to put on your English teacher hat here. Because you and I are both, you know, story constructionists, and you know, I'm a big believer in the Chekhov school of, you know, if you show a gun in Act One, you have to fire it in Act Two. And this episode made a very big deal of Grogu being placed on that stone and, you know, sending out a message into the world. And so, face it, somebody has to respond to this message. They made such a big deal about him being on that stone and, you know, and how exhausting it was at the end. And that's what allowed the dark troopers to grab him and all that. Or more to the point, the reason that Mando couldn't escape because this kid was encased in, a Jedi message system. Somebody significant has to respond to that, don't they?
Well, you'd think, but let me think about who all the Jedi that are out there. We've obviously Luke and is out there. Leia is out there. Ahsoka is out there. Mm-hmm. Ezra is out there somewhere. Cal Kestis from Star Wars Jedi Fallen Order is out there. The Jedi that converts from being one of the Inquisitors is out there. But other than that, I can't really think of too many other Jedi that might be available to answer that call. So, yeah, you'd think it would be somebody significant. I just hope it isn't the frog lady that shows up. I shouldn't have said that out loud because now it's going to happen.
Well, that actually brings us to our next episode, the Believer, which really is kind of a sequel of sorts to last season's episode, The Prisoner.
Yeah, kind of.
That one was directed by Rick Famuyiwa and based on a story by Chris Yost, and then Christopher Yost and Rick worked together in the teleplay, whereas this time Rick wrote and directed The Believer. And I would have put money down on Mix Mayfield never being a redeemable character.
Same here. By Kylo.
Yeah. And I have to admit, that's what both surprised me and delighted me about the episode. You know, the notion that you could make this sort of turn with that character.
I think you can make an argument that there are three characters that are believers in that episode, but I think he's the ultimate believer because he finally starts to believe in himself. I mean, he practically telegraphs midway through the episode that, you know, you got to do whatever you got to do to get to sleep at night. You can tell that there's like a tormented person. He's not just a jerk. Because I thought in The Prisoner in season one, he was a jerk. And not a particularly interesting character, but he suddenly became one because of his conversation with Valen Hess, that Imperial officer in that mess hall. And boy, there was a lot of great tension and probably the most important character moment with what Din Djarin did with his helmet, too.
Oh, yeah. No. Absolutely. I mean, there was so much genuinely surprising stuff in that episode. And yet callbacks to... correct me if I'm wrong, in Attack of the Clones, didn't Jango Fett actually use the same sort of weapon, a seismic charge?
Yes. What a great... Yeah, he did. That was one of the most popular sound effects in the history of Star Wars, and to have it come back.
Yeah.
It was very much a home run at the end of this episode. I also thought there was some callbacks to Raiders of the Lost Ark with the fights on that transport. It kind of reminded me of the truck sequence in Raiders.
Very much so. I mean, but you know, but at the same time, asking you to put on your story constructors and the teacher, hat again. Mm-hmm. Okay. Was it weird to you that Mando sent that message at the end of the episode to Moff Gideon? By doing that, he loses the element of surprise. He lets him know, we're coming for you.
Yeah, that was like the Rambo moment in First Blood. Yeah, I thought, well, this makes him more vulnerable than taking off his helmet in Imperial Mess Hall. Mm-hmm. But maybe that's just kind of the approach he wants. Maybe he wants him to be so focused on that he'll send somebody to sneak in. But it very much was a bravado moment that we haven't really seen. He's never thumped his chest at all. But now he's like, it's become primal, you know, like sort of like a primal father figure type. So it's kind of an interesting choice. We'll see how it plays out, I guess.
Yeah. I mean, I just, I, for me, I was wondering misdirection. I mean, you know, the defect of, you know, look for me because somebody else is coming the other way.
I could have done without it. I don't think it needed it, but it was kind of set up a lookout, here we comes moment.
Okay. And so, and again, I know, again, and I don't want to put you in this corner, but okay, given, you know, we have seen so many wonderful characters this season, either introduced, you know, the Marshal from the first episode or Perry coming back or that sort of thing. Who do you think is going to be on this rescue team? And, you know,
I mean, I hope obviously the Ahsoka shows up. You said Perry, I was hoping it would be Perry the Platypus, but that probably won't happen. So I don't know. I would be great to see everybody, because I feel like this entire episode, this entire season was kind of the Brave and the Bold Mando style, where he's always got a new guest host that sometimes overshadows him with whatever they do in the episode. I mean, even the Frog Lady to a degree. So I expect, like, I feel like anybody is on the table. I don't know that we'll see any new surprises, but you never know. You never know. I am hoping this will be an extra long finale, because
I'm hoping as well. I mean, that said, I have to say we're 7 episodes in at this point, and, you know, I honestly don't think there was a dud in the bunch so far. You know,
I wasn't crazy about the second episode with the Frog Lady, the passenger.
Well, you know, but at the same time, if you take the jump forward, the vehicle had to be damaged, so it needed to be repaired. So the beacon be. I mean, I get it from moving the chess pieces around the board kind of way, and also the fact that, you know, we're looking at a creature that initially got designed for Empire, you know, by Ralph McQuarrie. It's just that, I mean, remember that, you know, Jon Favreau and Dave Filoni have been very upfront about the fact that, you know, we're using the less popular Star Wars toys in the toy chest, you know, to build this show out of. So, you know, I get that.
It's true. It's more of an acknowledgement that how strong this entire season has been. I mean, this season, this series is just insanely spectacular. I mean, it's spearheaded so much of what Disney Plus has been able to do. And if any of the Marvel stuff is even half as good as The Mandalorian, then we're in for a real treat.
Well, you know, in fact, it's so funny you say that, because, like, of course, you know, I had to, you know, Aaron and I were recording a new Marvelous next week. And so, same thing, I was working that side of the street, and they were talking about the pressure that the success of The Mandalorian has had on the Marvel limited series.
Oh, yeah.
You know, shows to the effect of, oh, we got to make as big a splash as The Mandalorian. And it just sort of, like, you know, why did that have to be a hit straight out of the gate? You know, that's like, you know, that makes our lives that much more difficult. But yeah, no, they are definitely looking over their shoulder there. And, but more to the point, folks, this is Lucasfilm not kidding around. You know, they saw what could happen with The Mandalorian, that you could have as big a pop culture success that you could have with a hit movie with a limited series on Disney Plus. And they just pivoted, you know. And that's the thing about, you know, if you enjoyed what you're seeing with The Mandalorian, the Ahsoka series, the, you know, the Rangers of the Republic, you know, Andor, you know, that's the other thing I think we all need to be ready for, is going forward, they want to do a new Star Wars series. You know, that the final version will be quarterly. You know, that, you know, that some summer, winter, summer, spring, fall, you'll have a brand new show. But it's going to take a while to build up to that level of volume. But yeah, they aren't kidding around. And, you know, they're going to,
if quality's there, then that would be great.
Yeah. Well, you know, both the visuals as well as the writing and the casting. And that's the other thing that's fascinating, because you have, you know, the Rosario Dawsons, you know, the world, who have signed on to do Ahsoka and that sort of thing. There's a lot of people who have kind of raised their hands and have said, I want in. And, you know, again, not at liberty to talk a lot about this, but, you know, season 3 of Mandalorian could see some very interesting people turn up.
And but maybe it'll be me. Who knows? Maybe this is my big chance. Well, okay.
There we go. And speaking of which, you know, that's, you know, this Friday we get episode 8, the final episode for season 2 of The Mandalorian. And so, again, big question is, you know, who's going to be part of this rescue team? And it, at least for me, it's like, who answers that call? You know, going to be fascinated to see who turns up, you know, toward the end of this episode. And that's the other thing that I've been told, that, you know, what happens at the end of this episode sets up the entire arc for season 3. So, but anyway, now, sad part is last episode, you know, for a while, you know, and they'll start shooting in January, February there. But if you're looking to kill time during the same period, folks, might I recommend, there is this wonderful book called The Star Wars Book, Expand Your Knowledge of a Galaxy Far, Far Away. I also want to point out that I checked at Amazon today, and if one were to say order a copy of this book written by, it's, the name escapes me at the moment. But supposedly if you order it at the top of this week, they can actually guarantee delivery for Christmas. And again, if you got a Star Wars fan on your list, it would hard to think of a better, you know, book, especially somebody who's just trying to get the feel of the universe. And you did, you know, that if people are killing time now till we record a new episode, what's going on with Coffee with Kenobi these days?
Well, thanks for the plug. The Star Wars book is still selling well. It would make an excellent Christmas gift for that Star Wars fan in your life. Or if you haven't picked it up yet, I think it will fill in a lot of gaps in your understanding of this universe. So be sure to check it out. But in Coffee with Kenobi, we've certainly been breaking down each episode of The Mandalorian. We've had a number of extra shows. We did a big show on the Disney Investor meeting, which was a lot of fun. And then on our CWK Purva, which is our show for the Patreon members, we've been having a lot of fun. We looked at the episode of The Jedi very closely, but we also been talking about top 5 Christmas songs and Christmas movies and trying to put a little bit of joy into the end of 2020, because I think that would be a nice thing for everybody.
Speaking of which, just a quick side note here, a pet peeve of mine. Do you know the song Have Yourself a Merry Little Christmas?
I do.
Okay. As the story goes, that song was introduced in Meet Me in St. Louis, MGM musical of the mid-1940s. And
Judy Garland.
There we go. Oh, but the thing is, the last, there's a line in the song, you know, someday soon we all will be together if the fates allow. Mm. Until then, we'll have to muddle through somehow. And the interesting thing is, evidently, Frank Sinatra records the song in the mid-1950s. And he actually goes to, I want to say Burton Lane, the gentleman who wrote it, and said, this is the most depressing line in a Christmas song I've ever heard, and you have to change it. So they changed it to, from until then, we'll have to muddle through somehow, to hang a shiny star upon the highest bough.
Oh, yeah.
And me personally, I'm a muddler, Dan, you know? And, you know, and that's the thing. I will sit and listen with somebody. Will come on the radio and I'll begin singing, you know, Have Yourself a Merry Little Christmas. And I get tense and I'm hanging in there waiting for muddle. And, you know, more times than not, it's always hang a shiny star. But James Taylor muddles, you know, that in his version. And especially in 2020.
This year, yeah.
Yeah, we're all muddling, folks. You know, I think somebody needs to talk to ASCAP in regard to there needs to be put something in front of the version of Have Yourself a Merry Little Christmas. I'm sorry, this is a hang a shiny star, not a muddler. If you need to muddle, go find another copy of the song. So,
or go talk to Drew Taylor for a little bit.
We go. You know, again, another great muddler. So
that's what it should be, his epitaph. I only have one more episode to taunt him, so I'm going to take up every advantage.
All right, just dig in there where you can. So, speaking of which, as Dan just mentioned, we've got one last episode coming up of looking at Lucasfilm with the two of us working together on this show before Dan hits the road for strange and wonderful new places. On the other hand, if you're looking to something to listen to before we get to that last show, Let's see, we've got Disney-ish with Lentesto. We've got the aforementioned show I did with Drew Taylor, Fine Tuning. We talked a little bit about Aaron Adams just a few minutes ago, who I do the Marvelous Disney podcast with. Likewise, Dustin Fuse, who I do Universal Joint, and he and I are getting a new episode of that out the door this week. And God help us, we're working on it. The I Want That. And in fact, you know, again, Dan, right, Michelle actually bought a copy of your book to be able to talk about during the show. And if we don't do that next year, she's going to kill me. So,
you've been a busy guy.
Yeah, it's been an interesting time. All right. So, tell you what, folks, if you could do Dan and I a favor, if you could head over to Apple Podcasts and rate and recommend, not only Coffee with Kenobi, but also the podcast you're listening to right now, looking at Lucasfilm, that would be very helpful. If you really enjoy what you heard here tonight, if you want to head over to Bandcamp and subscribe, that would be great too. I so enjoy following you on social media. Oh, I meant to ask, how did the contest for the limited edition Mandalorian Columbian jacket finish out?
We had over 400 entries so far, and actually at the time of this recording, people have one more day.
Oh, okay.
So I'm looking forward to crowning the winner.
All right. Well, let me know how that goes. But if people want to keep tabs on you social media-wise, where should they go to?
Sure. You can follow me on Twitter at Mr. Zer, MRZEHR, and Coffee with Kenobi is all over social media and on Twitter. And then I just opened up my Instagram account to make it public, and that is Dan Zer, CWK.
Oh, very cool. Okay. Well, Nancy wants me to remind you folks that you can find us on Twitter and Instagram at Jim Hill Media and over at Facebook as Jim Hill Media News. And again, we got one more of these coming, folks. So, you know, be sure to tune back in. But till then, thanks for listening. And be sure and watch The Mandalorian this Friday, so we all have something to talk about on that last Looking at Lucasfilm.